You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. I have no idea if we're being heard on shortwave WWCR tonight, for as it was coming up to the top of the hour to begin our broadcast, I didn't hear any station break. I didn't hear any cue. What I heard was not the normal broadcast that usually precedes the Hour of the Time. I have no idea what they're doing in Nashville, Tennessee, with this broadcast. And after last Friday night, it doesn't surprise me a bit. Apparently, they either have some new personnel or, I just don't know, ladies and gentlemen. But I guarantee you, tomorrow, I'm going to have the manager of that station on the telephone, and I'm going to find out. Because if this continues, they're not going to get their next paycheck. And that's the way it is, moving west. Well, a significant breaking story here is a member of the Tri-States Militia who apparently held a high degree of trust and was placed in command of the Militia Communications Center in South Dakota, was being paid $1,775 a month by the Federal Bureau of Investigation as an FBI informant. Now, the man's name is John Parsons. That's John Parsons, Tri-State Militia member, based in Burke, South Dakota. He has been revealed in testimony in a trial in Oklahoma, the trial of Willie Ray Lampley, as an FBI paid informant. Now, I've warned you people so many times. I told you on this broadcast that there was a tremendous operation underway to infiltrate the militias, to control the militias, to pay people to inform on the militias. And it doesn't appear to me like you're listening at all. And this is just one of many all over the place. You're not performing background checks. Somebody talks a good talk, you give them a high rank and put them in a position of trust. And I got to tell you right now, you're exhibiting the signs of gross, and I mean gross, stupidity. Guaranteed you're going to lose the war. And when things like this happen, you deserve it, in my estimation. It's like you're playing some little cowboy and Indian game in the backyard. It's as if you don't understand the stakes. You think you can trust people? I'm telling you right now, you can't trust anybody, not even your own mother. And you'd better understand that. You are arrayed against the most powerful propaganda machine in the world. You are arrayed against the highest level of technology ever developed upon this planet. You are arrayed against an oligarchy of wealthy individuals who want to bring the world under socialism in order to enslave the common man. And concentrate the wealth of the world in their hands. You are arrayed against the most powerful military forces and weapons that the world has ever known. You are arrayed against people who, if they don't have the brains to come up with plans and techniques with which to outsmart you and enslave you, they have the money to pay those who do have the brains to come up with those plans and ideas and techniques. And you still run around with your little cap pistols, bang, bang, you're dead. Can I be the Indian today? Oh, I want to be the cowboy. Sorry, guys, you missed the boat. And you're going to lose the war before it ever starts. And it's one of the reasons I've been trying to make sure that it never has to start. You cannot. And you will not prevail against this enemy. When you exhibit such a marked degree of absolute and utter ignorance and stupidity. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear a tape that was made on April the 26th, 1995, exactly 7 days after the Oklahoma City bombing. The tape is by Dennis Leap, of the Philadelphia Church of God, which is a branch of the Worldwide Church of God, under a man named Armstrong, who recently died. You're going to hear a lot of criticism of two books. One is Behold a Pale Horse, written by William Cooper, yours truly. Another one, The New World Order, written by Gary Kaa. And the reason that you're going to be hearing this criticism of these two books will become evident to you as you listen to this man confirm everything that Gary Kaa and William Cooper told you in those two books, and that I've been telling you ever since this broadcast first aired on May the 4th, 1992. You will hear him admit that there's going to be a space invasion, and he claims it's going to be led by Jesus Christ, who is a space alien. He admits that they are bringing a world government. Oh, he admits a lot of things. He admits that man is going to become God. He admits that this is all a part of British Israelism, which is one of the biggest scams on the face of this earth. Some of you who agree with this man are going to love it. Some of you who don't like me will love his criticism of me and my book. But those of you who have brains are going to see the verification and vindication of everything that I've ever been telling you, that Gary Kaa told you in his book, and many others. Most people would never air this tape because of the criticism directed at the host of this broadcast. Rush Limbaugh would never do it. G. Gordon Liddy would never do it. In fact, I don't know any other radio personality in this world who would air a tape that was so critical of the host of the broadcast. But I'm going to do it because we're only interested in the truth here. If you agree with the criticism, that's fine. But if you're smart, you'll listen to the revelations that are made by the man speaking, Mr. Dennis Leap, of the Worldwide Church of God, the Philadelphia branch, about the coming New World Order and the way things are going to be. It is terrifying, literally terrifying. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you are strapped in your seat. Make sure that you take notes. And if you belong to the Worldwide Church of God or were thinking of joining, you'd better think again. In fact, you'd better go on a worldwide search for your brain and find out what happened to you. How did you get trapped by these despicable Luciferian proponents of the mystery religion charlatans?
If you look out at our society, brethren, there are many thinking people, or I should say many thinking people can see that there is something terribly wrong in our world. Now, even the many that do think, maybe I could qualify that, I'm trying to be a better qualifier of things I say, but even the many that are thinking, there's still few versus the majority of people out there. I mean, there are some thinking people out there, but even if you look at the whole mass of humanity, most of the masses are still caught up in the cares of this life, as Jesus Christ called it. I mean, they have their entertainment, they have their jobs and their occupations and their families, and they're really not watching what's happening. But there are a few out there that see there are a lot of troubles in our world, and they're very upset about it, and they want some solutions. But do we realize, brethren, that even those few that are thinking can't come to a right solution. I mean, and I'm talking about people outside this church. I'm talking about people outside this ministry. You know that people are upset, some very talented people, and they see things that happen like the bombing in Oklahoma City. And they look for an answer. They struggle for an answer. They look for a solution, and they can't figure it out. And it, by comparison with all the many people in this world, there's only a very relatively few people who can really understand these things and understand why tragedy happens. And only a few people can come to a right solution, and that is you and that is me, and do we understand how unique we are? There are many books out there today, and you can go into any bookstore. You can go into either a religious bookstore, or you can go into a secular bookstore, and you're going to see many books today warning about the coming destruction of the United States of America. And in this, they are right. I mean, there is a coming destruction of the United States of America. This country is falling apart. But brethren, do you realize, you know, that these books, even of themselves, still don't have the right solution? And even though they amass a lot of facts, the facts that they have don't really add up right. And there's two very popular books that have floated around the Philadelphia Church of God. One is called The Altar Pale Horse by William Cooper. And I have copies of them here if you'd like to come up and look at them. This has been circulated around the church, and I think there are pockets of people that probably read it more than others. But in my travels, I have come across that book, and even I first became aware of that book, and I think it was when it first came out. Let me just remember the year here when it did come out so that I don't... I think I first heard of it in 1992. When I was in Atlanta, 1992. There's another book out there called En Route to Global Occupation, and it's by Mr. Gary H. Kahn. And these men are very sincere men. Brethren, I think we need to understand that they're very sincere. They do have a lot of facts, and you know, some of the facts are amazing, but how much weight... If you think about it, how much weight should we in God's church give these books? How much weight should we give these books? And some people, I think, in the church to a fault have given them too much weight. And, you know, so I think we're seeing some of the results of that problem. So tonight, for the Bible study, what I want to do is I want to give you a biblical outlook on books such as Behold a Pale Horse, and En Route to Global Occupation. And again, I really believe it is a biblical view. Let me give you a disclaimer on the Bible study. You know, I like to give disclaimers now. I'm giving them more often. But let me say what the Bible study is not. This is not, you know, an attempt to mind control. It's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to control your mind. This is no attempt to dictate to you what you read. That's not my intention at all, to dictate you what you read. It's not my attempt, nor do I desire to put you down, personally, if you have gotten heavily involved in these books. It's not my intention to put you down. Neither is my intention to put down Mr. Cooper. Neither is my intention to put down Mr. Kahn. Brethren, that's not my job. But we do have to, brethren, instruct you. That's in the ministry. It says there, we have to instruct you. We have to edify you. But it is my purpose tonight to help you come to a righteous judgment. I mean, you do have to make judgments about certain things. You do have to make judgments about what you allow into your mind. We just spent a whole Holy Day season, and there was more than one minister talk to their congregations about guarding our minds and guarding our thinking. And we have to do that. Let's look at John 7 and verse 24 to begin. John 7 and verse 24. You and I are going to share rule of the universe with Jesus Christ, and you and I are going to be given an awful lot of, or let's say, an incredible power, and to the degree that we can make judgments, I believe, is the degree that Jesus Christ and God the Father can rely on us to make wise judgments or righteous judgments. And we have to have a good sense of judgment. Here's what Christ said in John 7 and verse 24. If you look at this whole chapter, he was being judged. by healing on the Sabbath day. And of course, people do look at leadership and people look at people. And, I mean, people in leadership, and sometimes we develop this, I think even in the United States alone, and maybe my view of NASA, sometimes we get this romantic view of our leadership, and we want to have people tell us what we want to hear. But here's what Jesus Christ said, John 7, verse 24, it says, judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. And like I said, these men have done a lot of research. They've amassed a lot of facts, but the facts don't necessarily add up the way they say they should. We could look at the appearance, but there is a deeper view. There's a deeper thing or a deeper opinion you need to come to. And, of course, we should make righteous judgment. I mean, we should judge certain leaders. We've had to do that with the ministry and the Philadelphia Church. I mean, that's really one of the main thrusts of our work. And it tells us that in Malachi 3, 16 through 18. It tells us that we have to judge or we have to discern, who's righteous and who's wicked. I mean, that's the whole goal of the Philadelphia Church, is to bring people back in a right relationship with God and with Jesus Christ and with the ministry. So we do have to make some righteous judgments. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 10. Here's a scripture that we sometimes only read one part of. And I did cover this with you in my Holy Day message from the Days of Unleavened Bread. But I think it's something we need to think about, and I'm thinking about it more and more. And I just think we need to apply it more and more. You see, brethren, we are in God's Philadelphia Church, aren't we? We all have access to God's Holy Spirit. We, as it says in Corinthians, have the mind of Christ. So we should be able to sit down in a reasonable fashion, with not a lot of arguing and not a lot of yelling and not a lot of heckling or any heckling, really, whatsoever. And we should be able to come to the same mind and judgment about certain books. And we should be able to come to the same mind and same judgment on certain issues that affect your life and my life and all of our lives together. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 10, it says, now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing. Now there's a time when this really comes into play, and many times we have our people out there, and they'll hear something on the tape, and if they don't understand it or if they have a question about it, what we want them to do is, instead of spreading questions or misunderstanding through a group, we want them to call the man that gave the tape, or call the man that gave the sermon, or call headquarters. And if you don't understand it, you speak the same thing by keeping your mouth shut. That's the way it goes. We have too much strife in our little groups because some people have gotten in there and they use these groups as a forum for their opinions. And we should be letting God guide our mind and our opinions. He says that there should be no divisions among you. Brethren, how much should we hate division? I mean, we should hate division with a passion in this church. I mean, we have been all subject to division. Why are you here and why am I here? Well, we're here because, some Laodicean thinks changed God's doctrine and created a division. We're not the people dividing. We're the people standing up for the truth. But there are some people that are out to divide, and there are some people out there that just want to, have a following, and that's not us. But it says there, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. You see, if you don't understand something, you just, you speak what you do understand, but then later, you shouldn't just hold your breath. That's where some people make a mistake. Well, they say, well, look, we have to speak the same thing. Therefore, I'm going to believe what I want to believe, and I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. But if there are issues out there, if there are doubts in your mind, why don't you come in? Why don't we sit down and we try and come to the same mind and the same judgment? I mean, aren't we all striving for unity? And I mean, we can have a hypocritical unity and all sit in here and smile and look like we're all together. And I think we've been shown over the Holy Days that, what's in our mind is what's most important. So we do have to come to a right judgment. And I can remember years ago, one evangelist preaching and saying, look, if you don't accept the fact that Mr. Armstrong is Elijah in your mind, and if you have one disagreement with any of his doctrines, you're not going to a place of safety. He said, it doesn't matter what you do on the outside. It's what's going on the inside that's important. See, eventually, if you have a mental disagreement with anything in the Philadelphia Church, eventually it's going to come out. It has to. It has to. It's all going to come out in the wash. So let's look at these books now. And again, please remember the disclaimer. And if you forgot the disclaimer, when you get the tape, listen to the disclaimer again. One thing that we can say honestly about men like Bill Cooper and about Bill Carr, or Gary Carr, excuse me, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if you even went to England, you could probably find these kind of books, you know, with the title UK on it instead of, United States. So you could go find these books. I'm sure if you went into Germany, you could find books. I'm sure you went into New Zealand, you could find books. You know, so really, it doesn't, the country really doesn't matter. But one thing, brethren, I think we can say, honestly, about all these men, they are end-time event prognosticators. I mean, they are trying to talk about end-time events. They're talking about destruction, right? They're talking about destruction of society. They're talking about, destruction of the United States. They're talking about destruction of the United Kingdom. You know, they are talking about end-time events. And we are told, how to be careful. I mean, these people do have a religious bent. And I'm going to show you that very clearly. And we've been warned about people that come to us with a religious-type message. Let's look at 2 John 2 and verse 6. 2 John 2 and verse 6. It says there, and this is the love that we walk after his commandments. And this is the commandment that as you've heard from the beginning, you should walk in it. And so we are to walk after Jesus Christ's commandments and God the Father's commandments. I mean, that's the theme. And, of course, the first four commandments had to do with loving God, and the second six had to do with loving each other. And it includes the Sabbath and the holy days and the statutes and the judgments. And we can go on and on and on. But there is enough record. I mean, there's enough tape record, the written record, what the Philadelphia Church stands for. Verse 7 is a warning. It says, for many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. We did run an article not too long ago, I think in either the Trumpet or the Philadelphia News, about what this verse meant. If you haven't read that, pick it up and look for it again. But Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. We do preach the family of God. And also, I was just preached the other day that Jesus Christ has come in your flesh. You have the Spirit of Christ in you. You have his mind in you. And that's what makes us family. He says, look to yourself that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we have received a full reward. Whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ has not God. I mean, it's very clear there. I mean, we have a whole church out there that is not abiding in the doctrine of Christ. And it says they have not God. I mean, they are alienated from God. And he that abides in the doctrine of Christ, he has both the Father and the Son. I mean, we do have a detailed doctrine, and it's a unified doctrine, and we believe very much in the family of God, and we believe we're going to be God as much as God is God. God the Father will always be the Father. Christ will always be the firstborn Son. We will always be the wife. Mr. Armstrong has taught that year by year by year, and we still teach that. And so we have to understand what this church is all about. And now look at verse 10. It says, if there come any unto you, and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. And so when you're reading a book, ladies and gentlemen and brethren, when you read a book, I mean, do you understand or do you look for an underlying religious philosophy? And I think if you really look into the New World Order, and you understand who's writing the books on the New World Order, you would look at them, more skeptically than you have maybe in the past. These people are coming to you with a religious orientation, but yet they're not bringing our doctrine. I don't hear them talking about the family of God. I don't, to hear them talking about being born into the family of God at the first resurrection. They may talk Sabbath, but I don't hear them talking holy days. I don't hear them talking about the United States of Britain in prophecy in the detail that we do. Or they may know about British Israelism. So we have to be careful how we view these men. Let me just read to you some of the philosophy of these men to show you that they do have a religious philosophy. I mean, they are, and I think you'll be able to clearly see, they are end time event prognosticators. They even use the words prophets and then with a message. You know, so that should make us right there say, hey, do I want to spend $25 on this book? You know, do I want to invest $25 in this book? Here's the introduction to the book, and it's signed by Barbara Ann. Now, I don't know who Barbara Ann is. I don't know if Ann is her last name, or I don't know if it's a middle name. I don't know who she is. It really, really never, never defines it. But here's how they set this book up. It says, there are many who do not want you to know what Bill has to say. They have tried many times to stop him from saying it. The scars on his face and the loss of his legs are his badges of sincerity on your behalf. And again, I do believe Mr. Cooper is sincere. It says, no one becomes popular by telling the people the truth. And again, I think you'd agree with that if that's a true statement. It says, but history records what happened to the true prophets of the past. And so here she begins to build a religious overtone to the book. She even refers to him and compares him like a true prophet of the past. She says, however, some have listened to their warnings and were not caught off guard. Others have put their heads in the sand and refused to listen. Here's what she says now about Bill. Bill has it together and has put it together for you so you can also be one of the informed of the world. A well-informed person can make the right decision. William Cooper has my vote of approval because I cared enough to find out who the man is. Now this is your opportunity. So even in the introduction, she begins to compare him as a prophet of the past. And here's what Bill says about himself. This is on page 2. If you want to follow along, if you have the book, you can follow along right with it. Here's in the first paragraph. He says, it is this series, this is toward the end of the first paragraph. It is this series of incidents that have convinced me that God has had a hand in my life. I do not believe in fate. I do not believe in accidents. And so he begins to build the conclusion that really God was working directly in his life to bring things to his attention, to bring things to certain points so that he could then write this book to save you. I mean, that is the underlying message of the book. It's right there. He says, I cannot and will not accept the theory that long sequences of unrelated accidents determine world events. It is inconceivable that those with power and wealth would not band together with a common bond, common interest, and a long-range plan to decide and direct the future of the world. So he does not believe in coincidences, and he believes that there has not been coincidences in his life. He says, here's what he also says. He says, I believe, and this is what he says about himself, I believe with all my heart that God put me in places, this is page 3, by the way, if you'd also like to follow along, so I believe with all my heart that God put me in places and in positions throughout my life so that I would be able to deliver this warning to his people. I mean, that's how he sums up his book. This is God, and he uses capital His. You know, so he's saying this is God's warning to his people, and I pray that I have been worthy, that I have done my job. You know, I mean, brethren, to me, in my mind, in my thinking, and again, I think I have looked at this book maybe a little more objectively than some others, but I believe this man, I mean, if you understand what we teach about our work and being the Ezekiel Watson work, right? Don't you think this man is putting himself on a par with Mr. Darrell Fleury? I believe he is. He said, this is my creed. He said, I believe first in God, the same God in which my ancestors believed. I believe in Jesus Christ, that he is my Savior. Second, I believe in the Constitution of the Republic of the United States without interpretation as it was written and meant to work. Now, that's his philosophy, and he's entitled to that philosophy. He says, I have given my sacred oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And if you begin to put that in light with some of the things that have happened recently, brethren, I think you're going to, and I can read some things later in the book, I think you can begin to see where someone like Mr. Cooper can incite things that maybe he doesn't even plan on inciting. He says, I intend to fulfill that oath. Third, in other words, he's going to defend the United States Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And one thing that I think is upsetting about books like this, you know, is somehow they believe that the United States greatness was caused by the Constitution. Now, what caused the United States greatness? I mean, you have to go back to the United States and Britain in prophecy. I mean, the Constitution didn't give us greatness. What gave us greatness? Go back to U.S. and B.C. in prophecy, and it says there very clearly that we didn't become great as a nation until the 1800s, and that's because we, you know, came in contact with the Louisiana Purpose. How long was the Constitution already in effect? I mean, God is the one that's made this country great, and really, it goes back to the obedience of Abraham, doesn't it? That's what made us great. He said, third, I believe in the family unit, in particular my family unit. I have sworn that I will give my life, if it is required, in defense of God and the Constitution. And, I mean, in defense of God, and then I didn't, This is page 3 and 4. It says, third, I believe in the family unit, and in particular my family unit. I have sworn that I will give my life, if it is required, in defense of God, the Constitution of my family. Fourth, I believe that any man without principles, that he is ready and willing to die for at any given moment, is already dead and is of no use or consequence whatsoever. So you can begin to think that, man, you know, is he setting the example, or is he setting the standard on principles? You know, no, that's pages 3 and 4. Okay, that's what Mr. Cooper thinks. Okay. Well, let me see. Page 6. I better read this. I'm getting ahead of my notes. He says on page 6, he says, I am the man with a message. This is the top of the page. He says, and the message will be accepted by only a few. To those of you who understand I am your brother, maybe we can change the future for the better. I mean, isn't that similar to what we say? And where you have a message, it's only going to be accepted by a few. You know, and you know, I talked about bringing this doctrine. And, you know, if you look at page 30, and I'll just show it to you. He talks about his wife and his daughter. And she's a beautiful woman. And he has a lovely little daughter. And they're on the picture with a Christmas tree. So, I mean, is he bringing this doctrine with him? You know, I think you'd have to begin to say, you know, we should, like I said, look at some of these things skeptically. And here's what Mr. Kaw says related to himself. This is on page 24 of En Route to Global Occupation. Let's see if I can find this. He says, Mr. Kaw was supposedly in a governmental office. I have no reason to doubt him. There's no way I can necessarily prove it. Or I should say this way, nor did I take the time to try and prove it. But he's talking about a series of events that happened to him when he was working. He says, that night I did get much sleep. I kept wondering what all this meant and how it might affect my future. Why, of all people, did this man share this information with me? Was this meeting just another coincidence, or was God trying to get my attention? And he says this throughout the book. He said, soon after returning to the States, I began what turned out to be a time-consuming investigation of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and related organizations, all the while continuing to gather information on global financial matters. During that same year, I would also discover there was a spiritual side to all of this. I mean, it says he discovered it. Soon I was spending most of my free time investigating what I loosely referred to as one world movement. The research was exhausting, but I felt driven to do it. Inside of me, I knew that this was what God wanted me to do. I mean, he's claiming, you know, that he has God on his side. Let me just show you some other things. This is page 67. He says, the amazing thing about all of this, he's talking about the New Age movement here. He says, the amazing thing about all of this was my experience of dealing with the new currency, the global societies, and the New Age movement all took place within an 8-month period. It took these three experiences to knock me out of my complacency. I believe this was God's way of getting my attention. My life has never been the same since. I was now prepared to do some serious investigation. He goes on to page 8. He said, after nearly 2 years of studying the New Age, I felt that I had a grasp of the movement and its inner workings, and I believed that I had accomplished my purpose in this area. I did not want to dwell on the New Age writings any more than I had to. The material was so dark and oppressive that I always felt weighed down after reading it. I believed God had called me to expose the movement. Otherwise, I would have stopped researching it much earlier. See, he felt God has called him to expose a movement. Now, brethren, we've been taught over the years when people say they're working for God, or they have a message from God, or they have a mission from God, and they're not of this church, or they're not of this ministry, what do we do about that? You know, aren't we? We're very careful. We should be very careful about what we read and what we accept. He says, I do not recommend that anyone do this type of research unless they are absolutely certain it is God's will for them. So then they should offset anything they read by reading the Bible at least the same amount of time. But he believes God has put him on a mission.
He believes God has given him a job to do. So I think that's enough. But if you go back and you read the underlying view of some of these men, you'll see that they are Protestant in nature, sometimes evangelical Protestant in nature, and a lot of the books on the New World Order are being written by evangelical Protestants. And evangelical Protestants teach and do a lot of things that you and I would never consider doing. And so we need to look at their books with a certain amount of skepticism. Brethren, I think sometimes we forget how truly unique we are as a body and as a church. And that we have so many wonderful things at our disposal. And sometimes I think because it all sounds like 007 stuff, or secret agent stuff, that somehow it seems more exciting. But only God can really guide us in the true understanding. And that's the point. I mean, only God can guide us in the true understanding. And God isn't guiding these people. He's just not guiding these people. That they're really the underlying philosophy or the underlying message to this New World Order movement is that there is a contest between God and Satan. There is this idea that there's a contest between God and Satan. Now, what does God think about that? I mean, you and I know what God thinks about that. Mr. Armstrong told us for years that there was never any contest between God and Satan. And if you think about it, what they're trying to do is they're trying to save a world that God isn't even interested in saving. Is God interested in saving this world? He's not, is he? And that's what we're going to learn on the day of Pentecost, aren't we? It's only some 6 weeks away, and we're going to learn that God isn't trying to save this world now. God has written this world off. And that's where a lot of us have to come to an understanding. Let me just read you what Gary Koss says about this whole thing in Root to Global Occupation and why we need to read his book. He said, he's talking about Satan's fury. And he said, Satan's fury, on the other hand, will be experienced by those who do not take the mark or bow to worship him. And in that he's right. Of course, he believes in the rapture. So this persecution will be in the form of imprisonment, torture, or death. Christians, however, should draw comfort from the fact that Satan's persecution is limited to this world. In other words, you see, they're going to be off somewhere. Maybe they're going to be on the moon. I mean they don't know where they're going to be, right? And it says, God's principal judgment against the wicked for last of all eternity. He said, this ongoing battle is part of the spiritual warfare being waged between God and Satan over our souls. And it explains why those who are doing the most for God are often the ones who suffer most. And so, I mean, that's the whole thing behind this, the New World Movement. Let me just tell you what Mr. Cooper wants. I mean, he says it right in the frontispiece. He said, look, he says, the ideas and conclusions expressed in this work are mine alone. It is possible that one or more conclusions may be wrong. The purpose of this book is to convince you, the reader, that something is terribly wrong. It is my hope that this work will inspire you to begin an earnest search for the truth. Your conclusions may be different, but together maybe we can build a better world. You know, I mean, that's the point, brethren. How do we build a better world? Well, you know, we have to look forward to the world tomorrow. Let's look at Hebrews 2 and verse 5. Hebrews 2 and verse 5. There is no contest between God and Satan. This is already Satan's world. And that's what men like Gary Kahn and men like Bill Cooper can understand. Both of them deal heavily with the evils of Freemasonry and the evils of the Illuminati. And they believe that the Freemasons are behind the New World Movement. I'm sure there are some people out there that believe this whole bombing in Oklahoma City was CIA inspired, or it was Illuminati inspired, or it was Freemason inspired. And that's what they're going to believe, and they believe that Satan is working, through Freemasonry to bring this one world government all apart, all about. And they don't understand that the Roman Catholic Church and traditional Protestantism is still Satan's church anyway. I mean, they don't understand that. See, they think it's a pretty good world out there, They think what they're doing is pretty good. I mean, they think they're working for God. They think all these ministers are out there working for God. But they don't understand Satan's wicked twist that they're all working for Satan, except for one church and one group of people. But Hebrews 2 and 5, I mean, here's what we're looking for. It says, For unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come, whereof we speak. See, the angels, you know, the angels have this earth. You know, Satan the devil was the prince of this earth. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 4:4. I think sometimes we forget this. I mean, this can seem so basic to us. But brethren of God, do we see how astounding this knowledge is? I mean, just think if Gary Kaw had that information that Satan is already in charge. Satan already is inspiring all the other churches out there except ours. I mean, Satan is in charge of Freemasonry. Freemasonry isn't evil. I mean, they do worship Satan the devil. But so does the Pope. So does the minister around the corner. They don't know it. But that's who's in charge. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 says, In whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to break in here because we may have some new listeners who do not understand the philosophy of the mystery school. The reason that he can say that all of the churches and all of the ministers and all other religions are all worshiping Satan is because the mysteries believe that the God of the Bible, the God that you worship in your church on Sunday as a Christian, is really Satan, and that Lucifer is the true God who set man free from the bonds of ignorance in the Garden of Eden by giving him the gift of knowledge. You are listening to the voice of Luciferianism. You are listening to the voice of the mystery school. You are listening to the voice of the New World Order. If you listen carefully, or if you have listened carefully, you heard him say, and he said, we will be God just as God. He said that earlier in this broadcast. You're going to hear more revelations. And what you don't hear tonight, I will finish this broadcast, or this tape, I should say, on tomorrow night. And judging from what I can hear on my shortwave radio, this is one of those nights when you're hearing something so extraordinary and so important that we're being jammed out of existence, at least here in the state of Arizona. And folks, it's not propagation that I'm hearing on the shortwave. It's jamming. And I've heard it many times before in the military.
See, what is our gospel all about? Our gospel is all about that, you know, Satan and the angels blew it. And God still is going to see this whole universe made beautiful, you know, with a creation, and God has to now use his family to do it. And, you know, that's what we're all about. That's what the gospel is all about. And you know, some people want to say, well, the Philadelphia church has lost the gospel. Well, that's so much hogwash. I mean, why are we out there warning and warning and warning? We're out there warning God's people. We're out there warning the United States. We're out there warning Britain and the rest of this world. Because there is some tragic events. But brethren, what's most tragic of all is some of our dearly beloved brethren are going to give up their positions in the family of God, and they're never going to have an opportunity to see this universe created properly. That's what's tragic. I mean, see, all the people in the United States that never heard the gospel, that never had an opportunity to hear what we hear, they still have a chance. But our Laodicean brethren, and I think the evidence is there how many of them were truly converted. I mean, many of them were truly converted. They're ready to cash it all in forever. And that's what's incredibly tragic. I mean, you know, review those scriptures. Revelation 12:9. What does it say about Satan the devil? It says that he has deceived the whole world. He's deceived the whole world. And what does Mr. Armstrong say about a deceived person? Well, unfortunately, they don't know they're deceived. And that's why, like I said, that's why men like Mr. Cooper and Mr. Kaw, I mean, they believe they're right, but they're deceived. They're deceived. You know, they are deceived. You know, Ephesians 2 verses 1 through 3, You know, what does it say? It says it's, that if you're disobedient to the commandments, they're disobedient to the holy days, if they're disobedient to the statutes and the judgments and the laws of God, and who's working in their lives? It says it's Satan the devil. Ephesians 2, verses 1 through 3 says that. Let's look at Galatians 1 and verse 4. I remember showing this scripture to someone, a long time ago, and they were asking me about the church, and they were asking me about certain things, and I said, well, this whole world needs to be changed. It's so wretched. And they said, well, this is a good world. I said, it is? And they said, well, look at all the goodness world. But what does Paul call it? And it says in verse 4 there, it says, who gave himself for our sins that he might deliver us from this present evil world. our world is evil. And I am so thankful that I am an American. I'm thankful that I've had the opportunity to live in America. I think it's obvious that because of the Constitution, we can have a work like our work go out from America. That there is a bonus there. But we do have certain constitutional rights that way that you can't find in other countries, not even in some of the other Ephraimitish countries. You can't find that freedom. But look at what our freedoms have given us. Given us pornography and abortion. And somehow some people believe if you could just get back to this pure constitution, brethren, when is the constitution pure? it's still part of Satan's whole government structure. It's not God's government. And there is some confusion in that. Some of the things in the constitution were based on the Magna Carta. Some of the Magna Carta is based on the Ten Commandments. But why isn't it all the Ten Commandments? It's just not. And we know that's not going to happen till Jesus Christ returns. But this is the present evil world, and what these men want to do is they want to save something that should be stopped. They want to save something that should be stopped anyway. And it's going to take Jesus Christ to stop it righteously. And that's what we're waiting for. The Philadelphia Church does not teach overthrow of the government. We don't teach that. We're not even teaching the overthrowing the worldwide Church of God, I understand, through rumor that there's this group that wants to take over the college and they want to take over the campuses and they want to take over the church. That's not what we teach. We're not in rebellion against God's government. They want to say, well, look, David never rebelled against Saul. Yeah, but David wouldn't walk with Saul either. why did David have a band of men with him? Because they did not follow Saul in his disobedience, and that's really what we are. We're not following Saul in his disobedience. We're not following, the wrong men. But we're not overthrowing the church either. We're just saying, okay, we're on the outside, and if you want to band with the truth, then you're going to band with us. If you look at what these men want to do, their view of how to deal with, trying to preserve, let me just read what they want. They want to preserve things the way they are. And brethren, who would ever want to preserve this mess? It's a mess. He says, here's their frustration with the New World Order. It says, if the New World Order, for example, were to be based on a two- or three-party system, all the New Age occultists would have to do is control each of these parties, something easily accomplished since they were the ones responsible for proposing the world government in the first place. These insiders would determine the tempo of change and the rest of the world would follow their lead. Sovereign nations would cease to exist. Guess what's coming? if you think about it, what are we saying? Brethren of God, do you realize that once our message is really understood by men like Gary Kaw, that we're going to be just lumped in with the rest of it? You know what we teach? What do we teach? We teach one world government, don't we? We teach that's the only solution to all of the problems. Since sovereign nations would cease to exist, a single global economic system would be established, and anything left from the old order of things would be purely superficial, such as languages, cultures, names of countries, etc. Any real authority would now rest with an international body controlled by Satan himself. And of course, we know the beast power is coming. But if you begin to think about what's happening, you know, brethren, we do teach one world government under Jesus Christ. And I think before it's all over and Jesus Christ returns, I mean, why do people look after him? Or why do people fight against Jesus Christ? Well, some of these men teach that there's this underlying plot to, deceive the whole world to think that there's these spaceships out there and these flying saucers. You know, it's like that's what they're trying to do to unite this world. And here Jesus Christ is going to return from outer space and they're going to fight him. Do you think maybe they have deceived the world to believe, you know, that Jesus Christ is some being from outer space? Which he is. It's from the third heaven. But these people want to save sovereign nations, and these people want to save sovereign governments. And you know, that, isn't that the cause of all the trouble? Isn't that the cause of all the division? Where men can't get together in peace? You know, I mean, even Jesus Christ tells us, in Christ there's no longer Jew, nor Greek, nor male, nor female. I mean, the separateness is going to end. Here's what Bill Cooper wants. And again, this is very, very, very tragic. But here's what he says and what he recommends. And this is on page 160 of Behold a Pale Horse. Now, it's not clear, and this much I'll give Mr. Cooper, it's not clear whether he's quoting something or this is what he advocates, but certainly he printed it in his book. So I would think he advocates it. And we need to send him our editing team, because it starts with a quote and you never find the rest of the quote. So you don't know where the quote marks begin or end. But it's also interesting, this is a test case in Oklahoma, and it says Oklahoma, and it's a law number 1750, the police state test case. It says Gary North recently wrote about one of the scariest pieces of socialistic police state legislation to arrive on the scene to date. Now, a lot of these people that are in the militias and in the Patriot Movement and some of these men like Bill Cooper, and he really is different than Gary Kaa, but they are frustrated with this seemingly unadvancing police state. But when they bomb the building in Oklahoma City, what are they causing? They're causing a police state to start. they're just causing their own trouble.
You'll notice, ladies and gentlemen, that Mr. Dennis Leap just accused Gary Kaa and I, William Cooper, of bombing the Muir Federal Building in Oklahoma City. This is an incredible exercise in the most unbelievable propaganda that I think you're ever going to hear. And I hope that you're listening carefully, because tomorrow night we're going to finish this tape. You're going to hear it all. He's already said that Jesus Christ is an alien, that he's going to come from outer space, just as me and others have been warning you, and that's what all this UFO baloney is all about. You're going to be amazed at the revelations that you hear from the mouth of Dennis Leap speaking for the Worldwide Church of God, the Philadelphia branch, the Philadelphia Church of God. And he's admitted that they're working for a world government, that it's the only solution. And he said, this is an evil world. But he says there's no battle between God and Satan, because he believes that the God of the Bible, but he quotes from the Bible, and they all do, because they are experts in the art of propaganda. He believes, as do all of the mysteries, that the God that you worship as a Christian every Sunday, or whenever you go to church, is really Satan. And that Lucifer is really God. And it's the same thing that Tom Valentine said in his interview conducted by Richard Noon in the book 5-5-2000. Well, folks, if you've listened to our series on the mysteries, you know. If you haven't, you need to. And if you're a new listener, you're probably baffled out of your mind and don't know what in the world is going on. In that case, I would suggest that you write and get a copy of our tape list and catch yourself up to speed. Good night, folks. Don't miss tomorrow night. And God bless you all.